Baby, you are gonna go broke showing turkeys like these.
It's turkey time. Gobble, gobble.
Did you know that the very first assembly of photographs to create a motion picture was a 2-second clip of a black man on a horse? And that man is my great-great-grandfather.
Great.
There's another great-grandfather. But that's why back at the Haywood Ranch, as the only black-owned horse trainers in Hollywood, we like to say since the moment pitches could move, yeah, skin in the game.
It's a bad miracle. They got a word for that?
Yeah, nah. Dad!
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Let's Talk Turkeys. I'm your host, Movie Miss, and I'm being joined by my co-host, Drive-In Dave. Hello, sir.
Hello.
You excited about today's episode?
Oh, I am so freaking excited.
Well, this was your pick.
It was my pick because I was really curious why you hate this so much. And then when I found out you hated it, I was like, well, this is payback for talking shit about Darkman. So
fair. So before we get any further into what we're doing today, I do want to give a little bit of a mention and a shout out. We have somebody who has gone to our Ko-fi website, or Ko-fi, depending on how you pronounce it. It's ko-fi.com/letstalkturkeys. And you can click on the donate button and support the show. And that keeps us going, keeps bringing fresh episodes to you. We do have a gentleman, James, who has become a monthly subscription contributor. Now, we don't ask for a lot. You can donate as little as 25 cents, and we will happily send you a Let's Talk Turkey sticker. You can purchase if you want to hand them out to friends and family and help spread the word about the show. But also, we take donations on that site. So again, it's Ko-fi or Ko-fi. Also, you can find a link to that on all of our socials. We would really appreciate support for the show. We want to also thank Tara, who was a contributor for us. And she was also the co-host with me on an episode of Jaws 3 or Jaws 3D in season 1. So that's that website. And we would love for you to check it out and get in on helping us stay with you and bringing you new episodes. So thanks again, Tara, and especially to James.
Yeah, I do want to say thank you to Tara and to James for supporting us. You know, we want to make this a professional, more professional thing. And I'm not just saying this because eventually, you know, there are plans for one of us to replace the other with somebody else down the line.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Please seek us out on socials. Find the links. We appreciate the support. And now to our episode today, we are covering the newest movie we've covered to date. It's from 2022, and it is the movie Nope. Basically, it's described as a neo-Western / sci-fi / horror. I would argue it's a drama, not a horror movie. Now, we're covering it because, as Dave mentioned, it's his suggestion because he knew I didn't care for the film. Now, Jordan Peele is the writer-director. He did have two other projects before this, real close together. You might be familiar with him. He had his directorial debut, Get Out, in 2017, and then he had Us in 2019. I assume you watched both of those to bone up for this as well?
Well, yes, because you told me to. But yeah, so I did watch them, because you said, like, if I watched those, I would understand your point of view on the movie. So I did. And I think I kind of got it, because I just did Us recently, and I can see where you like that one and you're kind of meh on the others.
Okay. I'm anxious to get into this now. So Nope has a Rotten Tomato critic score of 83% and an audience of 69. So not a turkey there. Dave is a fan. I am not. So today we are talking A Turkey to Me. That's the criteria today. This film had a budget of $68 million and did $172 million respectively worldwide. I would argue that's why he hasn't fast-tracked another one to follow, because you have to make in Hollywood three times your budget to break even is how they look at it, which is weird to me.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But at the same time, I don't want to see a sequel.
So he opened his production studio, Monkey Paw Productions, to put out his films and some other films. You might notice that he was a producer and I want to say writer. He was a writer-producer for a movie he was in called Keanu. He was a writer-producer-director for Get Out, Us, and Nope. Writer-producer for something called Wendell and Wild, Jordan Peele was. Do you know that one?
That one I'm not familiar with. I pretty much know him mainly from, I discovered him on Key and Peele.
Okay, yes, he goes way back. And he also was the writer-producer for the 2021 Candyman, which I didn't care for either. So a lot of it has to do, his movies in general, the writing. I don't like him as a writer, which is a me thing. It's a me problem, right?
Isn't it always, though?
Pretty much on this show. So I am going to be referring to an article from alternateending.com from 2022. Yeah, I think about 11, 12 months ago by the author is Tim Brayton. And he talks all about the movie Nope. So I will be taking some snippets from his article. He agrees with me that the screenwriting is the commonality problem that Jordan Peele has between his films. I liked this article. I was like, okay, you got me. Let me see what else you have to say.
Okay. I'm kind of intrigued as to what the problem with the screenwriting is.
So it's a lot of it has to do with the theme. He states that Nope is a big misstep in his career, and it comes from a place of extreme ambition and talent. However, he tends to not deliver on a lot of the things he's setting up, and the themes where you think he's going, he doesn't pay it off. The article states that Nope spends its first hour on a muddled mixture of slow burn horror, meta commentary about ethical dangers of making consuming a spectacle. It's the way, let me think of how to explain that I agree with him. Okay, so let's jump back to his film Get Out. He says in the article, Nope seems to split the difference between his previous two films. Get Out is way too hung up on theme and allegory, and you lose that because it's at the expense of a solid storytelling that he could have there. I agree with that, which is why I'm only a little bit, I'm like lukewarm on Get Out.
Yeah, I am too. Like the theme, I wasn't a huge fan of. The premise, I loved. I thought it was a brilliant premise, but the theme did not hit with me.
So then he goes further in his article to say the movie Us, the allegory in that movie is confusing as hell. And the film improves immensely when it finally just drops all that and gives you straight suspense and horror scenes. Now, that is why I enjoyed the movie Us. I don't mind if somebody wants to be preachy and has a message and allegory and all that good stuff, okay? The one for Nope is turning tragic events into spectacle for profit. That's his big message. I don't want a message, quote unquote, necessarily in my horror film or what's supposed to be a horror film. So in Us, when he goes more suspense and more horror, I'm focused on the tension of those attack scenes and the fight scenes and the chase scenes versus the message. Now, I'm not a dummy. I appreciate a message in a film. But like I said, when you're giving me a horror movie or you're claiming to give me a horror movie, just give me a horror movie. What's with all this other bullshit that drags and slows the movie down? Nope. Barely any horror. And this writer in this article, I agree with him 100%. The first hour is boring as shit. Okay, rant finished. Have at it.
Okay, I can see where you're coming from. It is like his movies are kind of a slow build, except for I thought Us kind of jumped to the point really quickly, which is why I think you liked Us, because it was like hit the ground running, shit's hitting the fan, we're ready to go. Something's happening. We're keeping you engaged.
That's a great word, yes. Engaged.
Yeah, so it's like, that's why I would say probably, I would even consider that probably his best film. I liked Nope because I like the characters. So I think that's why I kind of didn't, I didn't mind the slow build because the characters to me were cool, were entertaining.
Agree to disagree.
I mean, like entertaining in the sense of, I feel like they did what they were supposed to do. Angel was annoying. He was supposed to be annoying. He annoyed the shit out of me.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
OJ came off as cool. Like, that's the kind of dude I would love to just hang out with and chill. You don't talk much. You just, you know, hang out, have some whiskey, listen to some music. He seems like a cool guy. So it's like, I like those kinds of characters. That's what kind of kept me entertained with that part. But yeah, I mean, I can see where there's some faults here because there was a lot of concepts that didn't resonate with me. I didn't understand them until I kind of looked stuff up or I heard other people's opinions. Now knowing the spectacle angle, the whole monkey thing starts to make sense to me a little bit.
Okay. So that was part of the stuff the guy mentioned in his article, that we opened the film with that because yes, that is the, so here's the other thing. If I have to Google a movie to understand what was actually happening in the script, you didn't write the movie correctly, because the whole point of the Gordy's home stuff and Jupiter surviving is because he took the wrong message, quote unquote, from surviving that incident into his adulthood. And it formed how he thought about things, which is why he was fucked up enough to think he could do what he did as an adult. It informs his life choices. I don't get that from just watching the movie. It's a deeper theme of how his mind works. Well, unless you put pen to paper, you're asking me to do a lot of mental gymnastics to figure out your fucking theme. To me, that's not a successful movie.
Okay, it isn't, and it is. It to me, I do enjoy a movie that can make me think a little bit, because I do like that each time I watch a specific movie that I may have missed something the first couple times around, I will constantly pick something up and pick up a theme, pick up...
Horror, you know, though? In a horror movie, you want that?
It depends on horror. I don't consider Nope horror, to be honest with you. I honestly don't. To me, Nope is more like Jaws, like a sci-fi version of Jaws than it is anything else. So there's a lot of comparisons to that. So that's why I was like, I think one, why I enjoyed it, and two, why I was like, okay, it doesn't bother me that there's a lot of themes I didn't get the first couple times I watched it.
I would say there's a similarity in egos between Peele and Spielberg, but I think Spielberg has a leg to stand on when it comes to that. I think Peele just likes to blow smoke up his own ass. I don't think he's what he thinks he is. It's okay. You don't have to comment on that.
I don't know how to comment on that because, I mean, one, I'm kind of shocked at the idea of somebody blowing smoke up somebody's ass. That's like a whole fetish I didn't even know existed. So I'm learning something new about you. That shocked me a little bit.
Say I do it.
But I think all directors have an ego. I feel the same way about Spielberg. I think Spielberg's sometimes his head gets a little too big on shit. And it's like, all right, calm the fuck down, dude.
But I feel like his career kind of warrants that. Does, I don't think Peele has had that longevity and landmarks in his career yet to be this cocky.
No, but I think it's because he's probably feeding into, you're getting a lot of people saying he's a genius. You get enough people saying you're a genius, then, you know, you think you're God's gift to
something
the world.
To that,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, like once my adoring public finally starts coming out and telling me I'm like, you know, beautiful, amazingly talented man and I'm God's gift to the world, I'll start to believe it a little bit more than I already do.
I've got a stick of butter here for you so you can get your head through the door jam. So this film, Nope. It also makes me laugh because he sets himself up. He changed the name. I can't remember. I didn't write it down what it was supposed to be before it was Nope. But you set yourself up, man, because as soon as I watched this, I went, Nope, not for me. Nope.
So I actually have something for that, that I saw it on when I was doing the research. And they said that he addressed it on, I don't know if it was on Twitter or where, but they said that the title speaks to the audience reacting to what they're thinking and feeling in the theater.
It worked.
Yeah. And I don't think he meant it on your level.
Well, that's where his genius failed him, I think.
But I think that's where his genius succeeded. Because he not just got the people who were watching the movie like, nope, this is scary, or nope, this is just too weird. It works on so many levels. It even works on the, you know, movie miss level of like, nope, this is shit.
Did it say what his alternate title was?
No, I actually didn't know about the alternate title until you mentioned it. I kind of want to look it up.
I wish I would have wrote it down. Okay. But back to the film now. It was shot on location in Agua Dulce Desert in LA County, California. Also, the Burbank, California Fry's had just recently closed. So they filmed all of the Fry's stuff in the actual store. And I believe, I can't remember the detail because again, I didn't write it down. I think the manager of that Fry's is actually in one of the shots and he wanted to be involved. So that's all real, but they closed. So, you know, doesn't matter. You can't go to Fry's now.
Yeah, which sucks because like after watching the movie, I was like, oh, Fry's seemed like a kind of cool place. I'd like to check it out. Now it doesn't exist.
Wah, wah. All right. So the cast of Get Out, or of Get Out. I wish we had done that one. The cast of Nope. There's a connection here for Get Out, which is why I got sidetracked. The star, OJ, is Daniel Kaluuya. I'm not sure if that's how you say his last name, but he was also the star of Get Out. He was in a 2011 episode of Black Mirror called 15 Million Merits. And I loved him in that when I saw him in that. So when I saw that he was going to be in Get Out a few years later, I was like, oh, I like this guy. I remembered him from Black Mirror. In Get Out, I would argue he's got more to do. He's more animated, more facial expressions, more emotional things he can do. In Nope, in this movie, he is dull as shit. And I will post a picture I took on socials because this is all I thought the whole damn time. He has one fucking facial expression. It's a blank stare. He looks like he's a deer caught in the headlights or doesn't know what the fuck is happening. Like, duh, is like the look on his face the entire fucking movie. I don't need 45 second shots of his blank fucking stare.
Okay. I can see where you hate that. It didn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. I like it because I like that he played it more reserved. I felt he was kind of like more like his father's son.
He was in a fucking coma the whole time.
Oh, wow. I'm going to need some anti-venom after this.
I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking the movie. All right. So Daniel Kaluuya, we've got Kiki Palmer as M or Emerald. And if you don't know her, she was on the Nickelodeon show True Jackson VP a long time ago. She was the star of 2006 Aquila and the Bee. I enjoy her. She's the most animated, loud, fun character in the film. I'm sure you agree with that.
Oh yeah, definitely the most animated, fun character. Favorite character.
Annoying as shit though, right? She's over the top, I think. And because everybody else is so vanilla and bland, she comes out over the top.
Yeah, but I think that's exactly why, like you said, because everyone else is so kind of mild. Although I wouldn't say everyone is mild because I thought Angel wasn't too mild. He was just as annoying. But again, so, I think this is what they were supposed to be.
And again, now, thank you, because that goes to the writing. Who wrote them that way? Who wrote them that way? Angel is Brandon Perea.
That's how I say it. Pereira?
I'm not sure. Sorry, sir, we butchered your name. He's okay in this. He's annoying in a lot of scenes, but I don't hate him. Now we've got Ricky Jupe, so short for Jupiter, I guess, is Stephen Yeun from The Walking Dead. He was Glenn.
I always pronounced it as Yun, but yeah, I don't know. I'm terrible at pronouncing names. So.
Me too. It's a weak spot. But Glenn from The Walking Dead, so that'll help people know who he is. I would argue not in this enough. I was interested in his place, in his family, in his life, and we get a snippet of it.
Yeah, there are very few faults I find in this movie, and I can just feel this. Yeah, I was going to say, I feel the scolding coming from you now, but that's one of the faults that I had was I felt there were some characters that deserved a little bit more attention because they were more interesting, and I wanted more of them.
And the last one in our top build cast falls into that category. We have the amazing Michael Wincott as Antlers, the director, or Ant. And again, bland, plain performance. However, I think he's supposed to be an old, snarky, jaded Hollywood director. That's his role.
That's kind of what I got, was he's supposed to be that. And he did it well enough. He was the first character that stood out to me when I watched it. I loved him.
Amazing. And he's not in this nearly enough, hardly at all. So that's top build cast.
I hate that. I really, because I felt the same thing with, even though he's not, like I said, you can't call him a top build cast, but Keith David, who we're going to get to in just a few seconds, because starts off, great actor, freaking love him. And I wanted him in this a lot more. And he was not in it nearly enough.
Agreed. All right, so the IMDb plot. The residents of a lonely gulch in inland California bear witness to an uncanny and chilling discovery.
I could feel the sarcasm coming out of your voice.
Just like then I'm resonating. Doing my job correctly.
Oh, my Lord.
Before we jump into the plot walkthrough, I thought it might be fun that we do a drinking game. So every time somebody says the word, nope, you take a drink. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's a good thing I have tea here and not alcohol, or I will be shit-faced in the first 5 minutes.
No, surprisingly, you won't. I was shocked less than 10 times.
Really? It felt like more.
Yes, the whole movie felt like more. My God. So it's rated R, and I forgot to mention 2 hours and 15 minutes of screen time. So 2 hours and 15 minutes, and I was like, fuck. They don't say nope, but a handful of times I was shocked. But we'll still do it as a drinking game anyway.
So it's not going to be like hypothalamus?
Oh my God, it's never going to be that much fun. I don't think we'll ever come across that again. Okay. So our movie begins with voiceover and some studio cards. We get voiceover of a sitcom stage. We hear a woman saying, "You'd think they'd bring a gift to a birthday party, but nope." So there's one. Take a drink. So the sitcom continues. We get a laugh track. Suddenly it cuts and the screen has some words. It says, "I will cast abominable filth at you, make you vile, and make you a spectacle." Nahum 3:6. It's a Bible verse. So I had to look up the meaning of it because I was like, okay, spectacle, that word clearly ties to the theme of him turning tragic events into spectacle for profit that we discussed earlier. So this Bible verse translates to kind of the meaning is the path that leads to idolizing and exploiting only leads toward death and destruction. And that's from thinkchristian.net from 2022. They did that translation to kind of what that means. Oh. Path to idolating and exploitation only leads to death and destruction. So that's the theme, basically, that Jordan Peele was going for with this film. If I had done all the research first and then watched this movie for the first time, I might have enjoyed it more because I would have understood what was supposed to be going on in the minds of these people. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. Basically, what you're telling me is that you would have enjoyed the movie more if you had done the research. And now that you didn't do it that way, you have a grudge. Only almost as if this movie like came down a dark alley and then shot both of your parents. And then you devoted your life to ruining this movie while wearing a Batman costume, apparently.
Okay, so
that's what I'm getting, because this is like,
apparently you have a hidden camera in my house because you know what I dress up as on Friday nights. But I don't go out and fight crime anymore because I have a bad knee because I'm old now. So I would say that
the fuck just happened there.
The Grudge, better movie than this, even the American version. I said what I said.
I disagree on that, just because for me, The Grudge will always have a grudge against The Grudge.
Just like me saying nope to nope. Yeah,
exactly. Also because it's like, I can't watch a movie that's got Buffy in it and not see her be Buffy.
Oh, I know. It's a little tough. Well, Scooby-Doo, you overlooked it for that.
Yeah, but she's still kind of Buffy in it, but just dumb Buffy.
All right, so now we open on a shot of what we learn later. Again, right now we don't know this. It's a sitcom soundstage where there's a woman lying dead. One of her shoes is sitting on its on end, like just upright in the middle with nothing holding it up. It's really creepy looking visually.
That's where, like, as a director, he does some amazing shots.
Now, did you understand the significance of that shoe?
No. I didn't understand the significance of most of the stuff in this movie. I just enjoyed the movie.
Oh my God. Okay. Now you're helping me make my point, sir. The shoe is significant because it means, quote unquote, a bad miracle, meaning it's a tragic thing that's happened. There's blood splatter everywhere. Somebody's dead. But miraculously, there's this shoe sitting there like that. It's defying logic. It shouldn't be sitting like that. It's a bad miracle. Which later in the film, we'll get to later in the film, somebody actually says that line. But you didn't pick that up watching this, did you?
There's a lot I didn't pick up, but it didn't bother me. It wasn't like this movie came up and kicked me in the nuts like it apparently did to you.
A lot of people take offense when you trash somebody. They like somebody's, oh, you're trashing his writing. What do you write? Well, as a matter of fact, as a hobby, I do write screenplays. I just don't live in Hollywood and have an agent and have them published. But I do write as a hobby. And everyone who knows me knows that I'm a grammar and spelling police. Like, writing is a big deal to me. And I think on our guest spot on the Horror Humor Hunger podcast we just did recently, I pointed out script is a big deal to me when identifying a turkey. So all of that to say, I am picking the script apart. Yes, more than maybe a normal person would. You just watched it. I picked it apart because I'm like, what does this mean? Why is there a shoe? Oh, it's a cool shot visually. Yay. No, apparently there's a deeper meaning that he did not write. You need to write it, because I'm not saying everybody's dumb, because everybody isn't dumb. But if you want to claim you've got this thinker movie, give me something to chew on. Like, all it is to you was just a cool shot. You didn't get the deeper meaning because he didn't say it.
No, I do appreciate people that can, like I said, pick apart a movie and, like, you know, especially because for me, I don't mind if I don't get something. And if I learn it later, I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. That'll give me something to look forward to when I go back and watch it again. So I do like it when people pick apart the stuff. I'm just making fun of the fact that it's like, you're not just picking this movie apart. And it's not that you just have this mild little grudge against Jordan Peele. It's like this ancient rivalry. And it feels like you're just like not just punching this movie in the face repeatedly. You're spitting on it, telling it you're going to come back later and like do it again. Like this is like,
because
fun.
Because all of the things that followed, all the interviews with Jordan Peele, when he's on the red carpet, when he's doing the talk show circuit, articles, and then other people talking to him and writing their own articles, like that gentleman I mentioned a little while ago, who are saying, this is what the movie is about. This is the theme. These are the points. Jordan Peele saying, this scene means this. That scene meant that. Why do you have to do that? Why do I have to Google what you're trying to do with your movie? Why can't I just get it from watching your movie? I don't think that's good writing. But anyway, moving on. We cut to black now and roll studio credits. We cut between credits and shots of a monkey covered in blood on this now empty soundstage. Then we cut to a man working on his ranch farm area. He's feeding his horses, maintaining the stable. He's got some roping exercises he's doing with them. Then we meet the man's father, and that's Keith David. He's on horseback and they're making small talk. And we learn that they own a business using their horses for something. I don't think we're sure quite yet what it is. The horses is their business, basically, their livelihood. They train them to perform for show business, comes up, I think, at the end of that scene. So the father asks the man about his sister. Have you heard from your sister? Where's your sister? And the man just walks off. But then we cut to a shot of the air, and the air gets real still, real quiet. I'm still invested in the movie at this point on first time viewing. I was like, ooh, what's going to happen? Spooky, you know, the sky. We don't know, right? Don't know. And also I managed when the first time I saw this, I saw it right after it left theaters and it was on home video or whatever. I managed to avoid spoilers. So I didn't even know it was a quote unquote alien movie. Like I had no idea what the plot of this movie was.
Really? Because I kind of picked it up from the trailers. I kind of figured that's what it was aliens. I mean, like, obviously everyone had their like doubts of like, well, is he going to like give us a twist? Because he kind of feels a little bit like M. Night Shyamalan. He kind of plays with the audience a little bit of teasing one way and then kind of going the other way.
I can see that comparison for sure. So the air, we hear something happening in the sky. We're not quite sure. And then suddenly a bunch of violent metal objects just violently start, you know, falling from the sky. And we have no idea what's happening as an audience. And then the man looks over at his father and his father just falls off the horse. They rush him to the hospital, but he doesn't survive. So the father has died. We see a nickel went through the man's eye socket and into his brain when all this shit was falling from the sky. So to me, I was like, why was there change falling from the sky? And they try to explain it saying it was debris from an airplane overhead.
Which never made sense to me because that didn't, I don't think that would, like, that's impossible. I kind of wish it would have been a penny instead of a nickel.
Why?
Just because a penny hitting him through the eye and reaching his brain, being like, oh, penny for your thoughts.
Oh my God. And in all the articles, when I was doing the research, everybody kept referring to it as a quarter. And I'm like, do you people know what change looks like?
I thought it was a quarter too, but I didn't get a clear enough picture of it. I think it's because it's like very dark. The movie is very dark. And then with the blood and stuff, like I didn't focus on it enough.
Okay. So I did.
I missed that.
Yeah. It's a nickel. So we get a quick shot of the man now in his truck. We still don't know who this is or what his name is, but it's OJ, the son. He's sitting in his truck and he's looking at the horse that his father had been sitting on when he died. And there's a metal key, like a house key, stuck in his ass, the poor horse. A bunch of shit just fell from the sky.
That was weird. It wasn't creepy. It just made no sense. Like, okay, so there's a key there. That was another thing that, like, okay, am I missing something? Was there like a specific reason for that?
Yes, because the nickel and the key and other metallic type objects all fell from the sky all at once.
I mean, that part made sense to me. Okay, it's all, but it feels like he's one of those directors that each shot means something specifically, like it's supposed to tie into something. So like how you said
now,
the shoe. No,
you've nailed it on the head. You just said. They're supposed to mean something. They're supposed to tie together. Poor writing. If you have to guess and be like head scratching, what the fuck? Not doing his job. So then we get title card. Nope. Real big. More credits roll over this tunnel looking thing. We don't know what we're looking at exactly. It looks like a long shot of a tunnel. Then we see an image of a man in old film style, like flip film, riding a horse. And you hear like projector camera sounds. Then we abruptly cut from that to a soundstage where our main character is standing on a green screen with his horse getting ready to shoot what we learn is a commercial. And that's OJ. And he's got this beautiful brown horse, which we find out later is named Lucky. Boy, does this horse live up to his name in this movie.
I'm not even a horse fan, but this movie kind of made me enjoy horses.
So then we have Donna Mills' character, Bonnie, come on to set to shoot this commercial. And a lot of people would recognize her older folks from the show Knott's Landing. So that was fun just to see her pop up in something. So she comes on set and we learn now that the man's name is OJ because they call him that. And she even comments, she's all, your name's OJ? And it's like, oh, white lady calling the black man, oh, your name's OJ. I was like, really, Jordan Peele? Really?
I feel like he does do that a lot in movies.
We could have done without it.
Yeah.
But we also learn now it's because his name's Otis Jr. His father was Otis Sr. So it's now been 6 months since Otis Sr. has passed away. The commercial crew and director do not appear happy that they have to deal with OJ. That they wanted his dad. He's not personable. You can see why his father and now sister are the face of the business and they deal with people because OJ is not a people person. And this is the scene where I paused it and took a screenshot of his face on the green screen and I'll post it on socials. This expression is his expression throughout the entire film. He's quiet. He's not personable. And I understand a lot of introverts probably identified with him. But I would argue this does not make good motion picture viewing experience. I don't want to see a bunch of introverts standing around not talking to each other for 2.5 hours. Like, that does not make a good movie going experience.
Oh, man. I'm trying here. I'm trying. I imagine it's because, I mean, obviously he wrote the character that way for a reason. I don't know what the reason was. Nothing about this movie I can explain except the fact that I like it. But I kind of imagine like that's the reason why his sister and some of the characters around him are a little bit more personable. Their personalities kind of jump out a little bit more. I kind of wonder, is that why he did that, was to kind of make up for that? Because OJ is supposed to be that for a reason. That's where I felt a little bit of the backfire happens, is because, yeah, Emerald gets a little overbearing and annoying. Angel gets really fucking annoying. So it does kind of make OJ, I think that's why I liked OJ a little bit more, because he was so quiet and reserved. And I like characters like that. and it was a nice balance to the annoyance of the other one.
I see your point there.
Oh, thank God. That was a stretch.
So we see that Michael Wincott is sitting behind the director's camera. He's the one doing the commercial. You wouldn't know it because they don't really zoom in. But after repeated viewings, you see him and you go, oh, that is him.
Once I heard the voice, I knew it. I was like, oh, shit, I know that guy.
He does have a very identifiable voice the second he opens his mouth.
Yes. I love his movies enough. Like that, when he's in a movie, I pick him out immediately. Like, oh, yep, that's my boy.
So OJ announces to everyone on set. He apologizes. His sister is running late, but they are from Haywood Hollywood Horses. That is their business. They are animal wranglers. And just then his sister Emerald, or M, comes busting in, takes over the safety meeting, starts rambling, asks if anyone knows the name of the first Black jockey to ride a horse on film. Of course, everybody says, nope, take a drink. That's two. She says his name was Alistair Haywood, their great, great, great grandfather. She runs down the rules of safety and then lists off her resume in an attempt to see if she can get herself a job through the crew and craftspeople here and the director. Just rambles off crazy shit like a little psycho. It's so weird. So this being our introduction to her, what did you think right away?
Yeah, I kind of got the feeling like she was supposed to be overzealous and a little annoying. I don't know if that was because of like upbringing or what. Like, there's so much of the character development that's not explained. And I don't know if he does that for a specific reason of like, you're supposed to make it up in your head.
The hallmark of a great screenwriter.
A lot of people do that sometimes in movies, though, and it does pay off at times. I can't think of a time personally that I can think of where it did pay off, but
I've been... You're not making your case here very well, sir.
No, but it's I don't know. You're
that's fine.
You've got me punch drunk right now with your that's hatred fine. For the movie.
So as M walks away, we get a close up on OJ's face again, and I swear to God, I didn't think this man had teeth. He never smiles, not once. So they have a mishap on set. Somebody puts something shiny right in the horse's face and he sees his reflection and he kicks, and he ends up kicking something out of the hands of a stage person standing right behind him. OJ, we cut to OJ just having a moment. He's like in a bathroom or something and he's pissed about what happened on set. Then we cut back to him being fired. The guys got him outside and he's going, you know, maybe it's too soon after your father has passed away. OJ says, you know, we really need the money. Can you not do this? And the guy's like, sorry. So he gets fired. Then we cut to OJ and M taking the horse back to the ranch. She says that she's just staying for the night. She needs to get some things and she'll be on her way in the morning. So now we're understanding she doesn't live there with them. Then we see that they live way out in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere. But they do drive past a tourist attraction called Jupiter's Claim, which is near enough to them. It's not maybe a couple miles, I would say.
It seems like it's kind of close because I thought they mentioned like their neighbors or something.
So OJ says that it's this little town called this little Old West style town called Jupiter's Claim. It's been there for 3 years and it's only a handful of buildings and a few attractions. It's not even a very big place. I can't imagine that they get enough tourists coming all the way out here, but for the purposes of the movie, it had to be there. So whatever.
It's an odd tourist attraction too, because it's like a little Western town. It's like, okay, it doesn't look like there's anything there.
It reminded me a little bit of when they go on vacation to the little Western town, you know, by the Grand Canyon. Oh, and they go in the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now I see that.
You happy now, Clark? She's deaf. Yeah. That's what it reminded me of. So we hear a loudspeaker promise a show at Jupiter's Claim at 5:30 called the Star Lasso Experience. M wanders by a wishing well and she photobombs. You can see that there's this old timey bulb set up in the bottom and it snaps photos. You're supposed to lean over and like you put in your quarter and you look in and it takes your picture looking over the well. It's really weird. And she photobombs these kids and she's like, oh, sorry. So OJ gives his horse Lucky to a man there and they walk off with it. And then M finds out from OJ that he's sold 10 of his horses in the last 6 months. M gives him shit for it. How can you be selling dad's horses?
I mean, you can't blame her for that.
Right.
I would probably do the same thing. It was like, hey, those are dad's horses. Those are our horses.
But then he turns around and gives her shit back for trying to promote her side jobs, like just trying to get a job when they're on a job.
And you can't blame him for that either, because I would have done right. The same thing too. Like, bitch, keep your mouth shut.
And you're supposed to, I assume, gather that they have that bit of sibling butting heads thing happening. That's just what they are. But then it doesn't pay off because they completely click and get along for the entire rest of the movie when they team up to deal with the situation. So I was like, it's a little bit of the fun sibling rivalry that goes to nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that kind of developed into anything. It kind of like peters out like almost immediately.
So OJ and M go up into a meeting with the owner operator of Jupiter's Claim and its former child actor, Ricky Jupe Park. And we refer to him as Jupe for the rest of the film. So this is Glenn from The Walking Dead, because I can't say his last name correctly.
Am I the only one who had a hard time recognizing him without a baseball bat in his head?
Yes. You're the only one. I think everybody knew immediately. Oh my God, why is Glenn wearing this howdy doody getup? His outfit is so bad. So Em is looking around the room. She's distracted by all the memorabilia and souvenirs that Jupe has in his office from his time as a child actor. Most notably, the sitcom Gordy's Home, which starred a chimpanzee. So that was what we saw in the opening of the film. If you're watching this for the first time, you're now putting that together a little, I would think. It's still unclear at this point in the movie. So M asks about a framed Mad Magazine cover on the wall, and it's a spoof of the monkey or the chimpanzee, Gordy. So Jupe takes this opportunity to jump up and jump into action and start telling them all about his time as a child actor and Gordy. He takes them into a hidden room behind this picture on the wall with tons of Gordy's home stuff, memorabilia, things he took from the set, pictures, whatever, the shoe. And he explains to them all about the incident on set, what he's most known for. Instead of telling them the actual incident as he remembers it, he describes to them the SNL Saturday Night Live skit that spoofed it. Everyone celebrates Gordy's birthday, Gordy being played by Chris Kattan.
I thought that was great because I could easily picture that being a skit.
And what I did think was funny was he describes his performance as killing it, quote unquote. He was killing it as Gordy. Then we cut to a visual now of young Jupe hiding under a table on set with blood splatter on his face and shirt. Then we cut back to Jupe and he says, yeah, it was legendary shit about the SNL skit. And he's smiling. So this is where, again, it's supposed to be inferred and we're supposed to figure out he did not process his trauma. He has not fully accepted what happened to him when he was young. He instead fondly remembers the SNL skit instead of actually saying, yeah, it was horrible. It was tragic. This monkey went crazy, you know, whatever the chimp. We're supposed to put that with the whole, that's his mindset. And so that informs how he thinks as an adult. Therefore, it informs why he does what he does later for his show. We're supposed to piece all that together. I don't like that.
It didn't work out that way because I didn't piece it together. I didn't at all. But I'm going to repeat the same thing over and over again throughout this entire podcast. I still like this movie.
I'm not trying to kill that for you or take that from you. I'm just wondering, yeah, if your experience was this, like if you figured out what he wanted you to figure out, basically. And you're saying not in this part. No,
no, no. Most of it, I did not pick up on. In fact, a lot of it, I'm learning it just now as it's happening. You're explaining stuff to me. So,
okay.
I kind of feel like maybe you should contact Jordan Peele and request like a check since you're the one that's explaining the movie for him.
He's going to get a firmly worded email. Let's just put it that way. So the takeaway from this whole scene basically is that OJ, the whole stuff with him in the show, but also that OJ is selling his horses to him for $11,500, give or take, per horse. And he wants to set up a way with Jupe to get his horses back eventually. Can we work something out? Jupe skates around that. He doesn't answer that question, which is a red flag. If you already know how the movie plays out, you're like, oh, no wonder he doesn't say, sure, let's work out a payment plan. He doesn't say shit.
Yeah. My first time watching it, I didn't pick up on that, but after a couple other views and stuff, I was like, oh, you sneaky bastard.
So later at the ranch, we see M and OJ discussing the Jupe offer to buy the ranch. We didn't see this part in the office, but apparently he offered to just buy it outright from OJ, and he said no and turned him down. M sticks around to drink and chill with her brother. They're going to party a little, put on a record, and they reminisce about their dad and how stubborn he was and the fact that he built this business from nothing. OJ isn't willing to just let the business go. He's like, it's a big deal. It's dad's legacy. Don't want to sell it. M whines up randomly about when she was 9 years old and her dad bought a horse for her for a birthday present or something. And she named him Jean Jacket. Jean Jacket. That, really?
I always had a problem with that name. That was a really weird name. But at the same time, it does stand out. So I guess
if you're nine, you're not going to say, I will call him George. You're going to give it some random unicorn name, you know?
Well, even Jean Jacket's a really weird unicorn name. I mean, you know, where I'm expecting Pinkie Pie or something along those lines, something relatable.
Careful, your brony is showing.
Quiet, you.
So apparently the horse was supposed to be hers, but wound up being used for the business. And she's bitter about it and has been bitter ever since.
Now, see, that was one theme I kind of picked up a little bit that I maybe wasn't supposed to be there. Maybe it was just me, that it felt like there was a little bit of underlying resentment on both of the kids' side for the dad. Like, they loved him, but there was also a little bit of resentment of, like, maybe he was too harsh on them.
I kind of got that feeling as well, because as the movie goes on, you get little flashbacks. Yeah. So now we get what's going to be the first of several title cards telling us who we're focusing on next. And this one says Ghost, which is the name of the horse in the next scene. So OJ goes outside. It's dark out. And we see a beautiful white horse, which is Ghost, standing in the training arena by itself. So he's standing there with the horse, and out of nowhere, this horse just leaps the gate out of this arena and pound sand, is kicking rocks, it's gone. This gate was really high. And from a stand, like, the horse didn't even run at it. He just, like, leaped over it. I was like, holy shit. So OJ hops in his little, I don't know, ATV vehicle. Looks like a big golf cart with huge wheels on it.
That's what I thought it was like a golf cart or something. I don't know if they do those on ranches. I've never been into enough ranches to know, but I don't know if that's a common thing of, like, they just steal golf carts and take them back to the ranch.
Yeah, it seemed like it had really big, like, ATV-ish wheels on it. So he's going to go looking for Ghost and get him back. He stops and he can see some lights coming from Jupiter's claim. And he hears Jupe over the loudspeaker, because it's, I guess, just real close, saying that the spectacle they are about to witness happens every Friday for the last 6 months they've been doing this. And I thought to myself, because I know what happens, that's a lot of fucking horses, man. That's a lot. Every Friday night for 6 months?
Yeah, it would have been more interesting if it's like, okay, because he sold 11 horses is what he said, right? So that way, like, the number kind of would have added up, because, like, the 11 horses thing, it's like, okay, I like little connections like that.
Yeah, I was doing the math of, like, we found out he got 11.5 for Lucky. So I just rounded it down to 10 for easy math, because you know me and math. But if he's been selling horses, 10 horses, he told M, you know, that's a lot of money. So how is the ranch struggling?
That's actually, I didn't think about that. That's a good point too. I forgot 10 horses. Yeah, they should not be struggling unless the bills are really high or something.
Well, if you're getting $100,000 for horses in 6 months, like, okay. Anyway, sorry, yeah, moving on.
you're ruining this for me, damn it.
And then also, Jupe is paying for these horses. How much money are people paying to come to these Friday night shows? Because this man doesn't seem to have any, he must have all the money from being a child actor that he's willing to piss away into this Jupiter's Claim venture. This thing looks like a fucking money pit.
that doesn't add up either. And then also, like, you want to throw in logically, and I hate this because James is telling me that I'm using too much logic now. But like, logically, you think, well, why are you selling the horses? Why not rent the horses? Because then you're getting consistent money, and then you still, you know, you don't have to worry about like just one lump sum payment. You're okay. No, I'm going to continuously get money from you for renting this horse to you.
Well, we know why he doesn't rent the horse, because the horse ain't coming back.
True, but Jupe can always lie.
He does. So to himself, I guess, mostly is the theme here.
There's a lot of lies going on in this movie.
So the power glitches and OJ looks up at the sky and sees something speeding away into the clouds from Jupiter's claim. So he rushes home, looks on security cam footage, but he doesn't have anything to show M about what he saw. And they only have like two, it looks like just a janky minimal security camera setup. So out of nowhere now, this is where this shoe thing comes back. They're having a chat, OJ and M. He just randomly asks her, what is a bad miracle? Do they have a word for that?
Have you never had a random weird thought that just popped in your head and you asked somebody?
It's supposed to be on theme with the visual bad miracle of the shoe from the opening of the film. And the fact that I did, yes, I've had random thoughts like that. But the reason this one bothers me is because it's supposed to tie in to his theme and the bad miracle of the shoe. He specifically has him say, what is a bad miracle? And is there a word for that? That annoys me because it comes out of nowhere, which fine, people have random thoughts, like you said. But the fact that I already know now from doing the research, it's supposed to mean something, it annoys the fuck out of me now.
Okay. Because I always took it as watching it, he's referring to the incident with the dad. With, okay, you know, because I thought he, like later on in the bad miracle speech, we'll call it, he references the dad and like what happened and like the explanation for the accident and stuff. And so I just always kind of took it as that. Again, I'm taking a lot of this movie at face value. So,
but that is also one of the bad miracles, quote unquote, in the movie. Yes, a miraculous thing happened that he gets taken out by a fucking nickel from the sky. That's miraculous. And it was bad. So I get that.
It was more miraculously bad that I'm still standing by the fact that we didn't get the penny. So
M's response to do they have a word for that is nope. Take a drink. That's number three. So OJ tells M in a very roundabout way, because this man has got no people skills and no idea how to talk to people, that he thinks he saw a UFO and maybe it has something to do with their father's death. Cut to OJ and M shopping at Fry's, a remnant of the recent past. They're discussing how OJ is broke. Again, how you piss away $100,000 in 6 months, I don't know. He's broke, so she's going to pick up the tab for today's shopping trip. How does she make her money? How can she be away from work this long and still have money? All unclear. No answers to that.
Yeah, there is a lot of that's now I'm starting to realize does not make sense. Damn it, you're ruining this.
So they pay for all this. They get a bunch of security camera things and they're going to pay for it. And all the stuff to set it up, they want to get the perfect UFO shot is what she's explaining to OJ. We're doing this because we need the money shot. We need the Oprah shot, you know, something that's going to be the it shot that makes them rich and famous. That's the goal.
You set it up at least the right way. I'm talking rich and famous for life. How you doing? You look pretty. It's like she got a big house.
How
we put it out? Well, that's what I'm saying. We don't just go for the quick cash here, okay? We go to the most credible platform to do the story.
What's that, like Oprah?
Yeah, like Oprah, for example. After that, everybody want in.
But I'm saying there's plenty of videos of flying online. I saw one the other day that wasn't on Oprah.
I didn't say Oprah. You said Oprah. You love Oprah. Like, all I'm saying is all that online is fake, low quality. Ain't nobody gonna get what we gonna get.
What we gonna get?
The shot.
What shot?
The shot. The money shot. Undeniable, singular, the Oprah shot.
So now it's like, okay, here is the driving force and the goal and the point of the whole rest of the film. The next hour, 45 minutes. That's what's going to happen. They're trying to get the money shot. I'm not on board with characters that seem to have pissed away their fortune and are not making smart life choices. And they want to be rich and famous. That I'm on board with that? I'm supposed to be like, okay. No, I think it's asinine. No.
It's not a good character trait. It does kind of make you not like, okay, they're only in it for the money. Yeah. I don't know. I still like them though.
You're going to have to quantify that. You're going to have to qualify that to me because I don't understand what you find appealing about these people. Emma's annoying as shit and OJ is boring as fuck. What do you like about these people? I don't understand.
I like OJ's stoicism. I like stoic, quiet characters. That's to me, always fascinating characters. It appealed to me. I can't even explain what it was that appealed to me about his character. I mean, M gets on my nerves quite a bit, but she makes me laugh enough that I'm like, okay, I can let it go. But yeah, I cannot explain it with OJ. There's something about his character that I really, really enjoyed.
Okay. So at checkout now, we see that a guy that works there, his name is Angel, helps them out. And at this moment, when we first meet him, he has zero personality. He is the most unenthused cashier who seems irritated to even have to be at his job. This bothers me. It does not endear him to me whatsoever because I can't tell you how many times I, in my life, have worked in retail as a cashier, and I was, I don't know what word you want to use, above it. I was smart enough to know that, like, if you're coming, I'm not the super chatty person who's like, how's your day? What are you going to be doing today? Blah, 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 blah. But I was pleasant. Oh, did you find everything? You know, smile and be nice, like courteous. I didn't act like I hated my fucking job and didn't want to fucking be there. And so I can't stand that when in real life that happens. I don't need it in my movie.
So what you're telling me is that he was able to initiate a response with the character in this movie by emulating something that happens in real life. And he was able to get that response from you. So he actually kind of like reached in and got to you a little bit with this character in this movie.
Yes.
He kind of did his job.
But it has... an unpleasant viewing experience attached with it, though, a bad emotion attached to it. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to evoke that response in your viewing audience?
Maybe you're not supposed to like that character.
Yes. I'm looking at that guy going, I don't like that fucking guy. No.
Did it help you like the other characters anymore?
Nope. So they deny help for install. They're like, no, it's fine. We got it. And then they mention that they've had power outages that knocked out their cell phones as well. And Angel goes on this condescending rant about how cell service and technology in general works. He's like basically explaining how things work. And that's a battery and that shouldn't have anything to do with power outages. Blah, blah, blah. Again, don't fucking like you, bro. Shut up. I don't need your negativity today, my man. So he ends up saying at the end of this rant, or maybe you're just in a UFO hotspot, and they just stare blankly at him, both of them. So we cut to Angel showing up at the ranch in his van, his Fry's van, with a shit ton of gear. How she paid for all this? Does she have an American Express black card? I don't know.
That, now that you bring it up, that does start to bother me a little bit. That didn't make any sense.
Maybe she's been out in the California desert panning for gold. She's got a chest of gold doubloons buried. Who knows?
There's something going on because it doesn't make sense how she's got this money and they're complaining about not having the money and they're able to. I mean, this has got to be like thousands and thousands of dollars of equipment.
And she's bitching at OJ. Don't sell the family business, you know, keep it in the family. And he's going, yeah, I know, I'm not going to sell dad's legacy. You guys are complaining. You got to keep the business open. He's been selling horses. She's pissed about that. Why haven't you just been giving him all this money then to help him keep the business afloat so he doesn't have to sell the horses? If you're floating in pirate gold or whatever.
Damn your logic.
So Angel says, it's not going to take any longer than an hour. I can get this done. M excuses herself and says she's got to go to the store. Peace out. So she leaves. Angel apologizes to OJ for his mood and says it's because his girlfriend of 4 years left him. He tries to show OJ pics on his phone, and OJ just stands there with that coma face, is what I'm going to call it. I'm with him, though.
I was going to say, you can't blame him on that one.
I don't care about your life. Just ring my shit up. Just hook my shit up. I don't care about your life. You're nobody to me. Like, you know.
At first, I hated Angel the first viewing, and then more and more it grew. I was like, okay, I don't hate him, but he's still annoying because he feels like he's that character that's forcing himself into the movie.
Yes. It's like you're here to do a job. Just do your job. I don't care about your personal life. You know, go to therapy or talk to your mom or your friends. Like, why are you talking to me? I don't know you. So we cut to Angel showing OJ how to operate multiple cameras from a laptop. Angel says they don't call UFOs UFOs anymore. Did you know that? They're now called UAPs. They discuss how the government hides proof of aliens from us. It's a big conspiracy. Then M drives up a nearby road, stops, and yells at OJ for help from way far away. They can hear each other across this giant plot of land. So OJ and Angel both drive down to the road to meet her. They set up a horse statue decoy, she calls it, that she clearly stole from Jupiter's Claim from out front. It has this tacky colored flag, long strand of flags like hanging on it, flapping in the wind. She clearly stole it from and they help her set it up anyway.
To me, it was confusing of like, how the hell did she get that horse? Like, how did she steal that? Because it looks like it might be heavy. And even if it's not, it's big enough that how the hell are you going to sneak that out of anything?
That's... And by herself.
Yeah.
But and got it into the trailer and brought it here. But yet she needs help unloading it and setting it up. Well, bitch, you did it by yourself the first time.
It kind of makes me feel like maybe she's a little lazy. Like, did she trick some people to steal it for her?
Right. So now they're back after setting that up, back up in the area where OJ was a second ago. And Jupe drives up the road to where M was a minute ago. And he's in his truck. He's at the fenced property line and he's quite a ways away. But they all yell at each other back and forth, just screaming. So the scene ends with Jupe inviting them to his family show Friday night at 5 o'clock. I'm excited though when this happened because I'm like, ooh, we get to go see what the big deal is. Finally.
I wish I could have seen your first viewing of this. Like, I could just imagine your face slowly as this movie goes on, just like the big smile dying out as you're watching this movie. Like by the end, you're just like a big frown and like angry glare of like, fuck you, Jordan Peele.
So now we cut to Angel giving final instructions to M and OJ on all their equipment. He asks them what's going on, and they don't want to say. Obviously, the M wants to keep it under wraps so she can get the big payday. He offers to monitor the feed for them, and they say no. Do not do that. Also, you can't do that. That's not legal, right?
That's if you're asking to do it, then that would kind of negate the legality of it. But that's probably why he asked. But yeah, you're not supposed to do it. So
he leaves and then OJ heads off to do some work out there on the ranch. Then we cut to a title card that says Clover, which Clover obviously is going to be another horse.
Made me think of Cloverfield, though.
Also a better movie than this.
Oh, I disagree.
Oh, I smell an episode. So we cut to nighttime. M is asleep in an RV. First thing that popped in my head was, huh? Where is this? Why does she have a whole RV set up with all her stuff? If she's got so much money and she was talking about going home to wherever city she's in and her significant other, which I think they say is a female, not that that matters, but they make a comment that she's got somebody waiting for her and like a life somewhere. And then we cut to her in an RV, which looks like it's fully furnished with all her shit. And then we see an outside shot of it and there's lights strung up and like it's hunkered down. It's established, like it's here. My question is, it's on the ranch. Is this just her crash pad home away from home? Why didn't she stay in the house? That seemed weird.
This is what kind of adds to my thought of like maybe there was some tension between her and the father or something. Like when she was younger, like before she moved out on her own, that's where she stayed, where she had her own little place.
So then we cut to a shot of OJ working on what looks like a little arts and crafts project there in the house. And a noise from a horse outside the horse stable area sets him off to investigate. He's like, what's going on out there? So OJ turns on the lights inside the stable area. And we also see there's an indoor arena. And then he doesn't turn on the lights. He turns off the lights. He goes in, makes sure everything looks good. He turns off the lights. And just as he's leaving, the lights flip back on. Now, as somebody who thought they were in for a horror movie, my little hairs in the back of my neck were going, woo, woo, woo. Something gonna happen. What's up now? Right?
It was a little freaky. Like first viewing, this is where it had me sucked in. Like I was telling someone while I was watching this movie, I kept getting phone calls. I had to pause the movie while I was watching it. And I was getting pissed at the person calling me. I was like, stop calling me. I'm getting sucked into this movie. Leave me alone.
Yeah, it ramps up here where you think you're going to get a great scene. So he sees two alien looking people, black clothes, gray heads, like the gray alien with the eyes. And they slowly creep out of the shadows and start approaching him. He backs up and he says, nope, nope. So drink two, that's 4 and 5. He says it twice. And I think he says, fuck this shit. Or maybe that's just what he's thinking. I can't remember because
I just watched it before we recorded this. So yeah, he said, fuck this shit.
And he starts to pull out his phone and his little flip phone and film video, which I was trying to remember back when I had a flip phone. Could you do that with those old?
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
They did have flip phones with videos. That's kind of what confused me, because I know flip phones have made a comeback, but that looks like an old flip phone. And I don't know when this movie was supposed to be taking place. So that's where I was a little confused on the timeline of like, okay, shouldn't, because you got some high tech shit out there for video cameras and stuff like that. Why does no one seem to have an iPhone?
The only thing I could think of was that they were trying to hit the point home harder that he is out of touch. He's an introvert. He keeps to himself. Of course, he would have an old phone. Who's he talking to? That kind of thing.
That makes sense. Because now that I said the iPhone thing, I do recall I could have swore I thought M has like a smartphone. So that does make sense then if he's out of touch. That goes to his character. See, you just made me love the movie even more.
Damn it. He turns to Bolt and he punches another alien in the face that's hanging upside down right next to him, and they fall on their head and his head falls off, revealing that it's somebody in a costume. So the other people, they all gather up. It's three of them. They're in these alien costumes and they pull their heads off and they're laughing and they're going, don't mess with Jupiter's claim. And they run off. So clearly it's payback for stealing the horse, right?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed by that because I really wanted aliens. I really, really wanted aliens.
Again, the movie failing us, the viewing audience. We wanted aliens.
It did. It just, oh my Lord, it set up for this really cool premise. I was thinking like Signs. I love the movie Signs. I thought Signs was a good movie. I'm sure you hated it.
No, I love the movie Signs, actually.
Okay, good. So yeah, I was expecting something like that. And so like, yeah, when the mask comes off, I was like, oh shit. But I held on to hope that maybe later we were going to get the real aliens.
Yeah. No, I love the movie Signs because those characters were better characters. I was more invested in that family and everything than these people. The reason I had a sour look on my face just a second ago is because I'm looking at my notes for the next thing I'm going to say. Another letdown. These aliens, this is the prank on him for stealing the horse, right? But what a very specific prank, because it's an alien spaceship or whatever, we don't know, in the clouds that's terrorizing them and everything. How would they know that aliens is the thing? They could have dressed up in scary clown costumes. They could have done anything, but they chose aliens. Very specific prank. How would they know that they've been trying to get footage of a UFO and this is what would creep them out? How did these kids know that?
that I would go off of, because obviously there's aliens. Shoop is dealing with aliens. It's like that's the whole idea you're getting from him with the whole, you know, wrangling space thing and all that kind of stuff. And there's a scene coming up that apparently ties into this, that when we get to it, remind me and I'll bring it up to you, because I didn't even know this. This is something, one of the many things I did not catch until I looked at the trivia and all that stuff on IMDb.
I honestly have no idea what you're alluding to. I have no idea.
We'll see.
So M comes running in after all the commotion. So clearly she's right close in that trailer. And OJ says, oh no, they let Clover out. So we got to go find Clover. Cut to Fry's. It's end of the night work day. We get a female employee sneaking up behind Angel and peeping on him. And he is checking out the security feed at the ranch, which he was not told he could do. Shame on him. Now outside at the ranch, OJ spots Clover out in a field and he walks out to get him. M sees a bug on the security camera in the shed where the whole setup is. It's a praying mantis and it's blocking the view of one of the cameras. She gets a call from Angel saying, camera B is down. You've got a bug on a camera. And she's like, what the hell? Why are you looking at our feed? OJ puts a rope on Clover, but then wind starts to kick up and the horse gets spooked and bolts off, just knocking OJ right to the ground. OJ sees the decoy horse that M had gotten and set up, gets sucked up into a cloud. M yells at OJ, run, run. So he does, right into a barn to hide.
I was thinking, like, why is it, and this is a common theme in all horror movies, why is it you have to remind the character to run? Like, if I see some scary shit, I don't need to be reminded to run. My instinct is my ass will run.
Okay, I will give you an example. Yes, I agree with you. I would totally turn and, you know, run for the hills. But Rawhead Rex, we just did recently. If you remember, the pregnant wife is so horrified by what she's witnessed. She knows she has to run, but she's frozen with fear and she's like trying to force her body to go because she's frozen with fear. That's the only thing I could think of, is maybe his way of reacting to something like that is to just stand there paralyzed with fear or awestruck because he doesn't know what is happening. His instinct isn't necessarily to run.
I could see that. Or, you know, it's just another thought occurred to me. Maybe he's a fan of Jurassic Park and he figures its vision is based on movement. And if he doesn't move, we won't see him.
He could run, just have to do it in a serpentine pattern. So we hear loud noises and we see a shape moving through the clouds, mostly hidden. The power fluctuates and M's call with Angel gets dropped. M climbs to the roof to try to get the bug off of camera A, because it's blocking the view. Her solution to this is to throw snacks at it. She grabs whatever food she has in her hand, her little snacking food, and is like throwing chips at it or some shit.
Really? It is Sour Patch Kids. I know, because again, I just watched it this morning and I always love Sour Patch Kids. So this is another movie that every time food shows up in this movie, I crave this movie. Because a female employee at Fry's had some Flamin' Hot Cheetos. So now, after we record this, my ass is going out to get some Flamin' Hot Cheetos and some Sour Patch Kids.
So Clover returns, runs through the field, dust is kicking up, and then he's gone. And then the UFO zips away. So M finds OJ in the shed watching the security cams. And this was the only line in the whole movie where I laughed out loud and I thought something was genuinely funny, is when M says, that praying mantis better pray that I don't see him, because if I do, I'm going to eat him. And the way she said it was so funny, cocky and real fast. I was cracking up.
There was a few lines that actually made me laugh the first time watching it. It didn't have the same effect more. I don't laugh as much. I'm kind of curious if I will be like that when I go back and watch Us again, because Us had a lot of really funny lines, but that was my first time. So is it going to still be as funny the next time around?
So M wants to leave. She says, this isn't worth it after you spent all that gold doubloons on security equipment. And now you're like, forget it. No, bitch, you're invested.
I kind of picture like now you, I imagine you have this picture in your mind of like her being like Jack Sparrow or some shit, just like out sailing the desert, picking up like all this just random gold and stuff.
Well, how else do you explain her mini fortune? I don't know. She's not selling horses. OJ is.
I have explanations I can use, but I don't think it would be proper to say them.
So she says she's out of here. It's not worth it. Nope. So there's number six. She says it again. Take a drink. She wants OJ to come with her. And of course, OJ says he's not leaving. So then we cut to OJ remembering his dad telling him that the horse Ghost isn't fit to be trained. Then we see him lying awake in bed, staring over at the wall. And there's a little baggie pinned to the wall holding the nickel. Now we zoom in on it and you can see it is in fact a nickel. The one that was in his dad's head. He kept it. How fucking creepy is that?
Yeah, I was going to say two things. First off, that is creepy. Why would you keep the thing that killed? I mean, that'd be like Jackie O saying like, hey, can I have the bullet? Two, okay, I still didn't see it was a nickel, but I don't think, I blame honestly just that it was so dark because there's a lot of shots that are so dark in this movie that it's sometimes it's hard for me to see the picture. That's so it's my eyesight. I'm blaming my eyesight, okay?
So we go now to director Antlers Holst, and that's Ant, and that's Michael Wincott. We see it's actually him now. And M is on the phone with him, reminding him who she is from the commercial shoot from a couple of days ago. Does it really seem like it's only been 3 days or whatever? Like, what? All this has happened in a couple of days?
It feels like this has been a longer, yeah. Like this has been like a week-long event that's been happening.
There's been at least two Friday nights that we could track because of Jupe's announcement and shows. It's been a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, because that's right. When they first show up to sell the horse, that was Friday. And then...
they just had another one a minute ago. Yeah, outside.
So it's been about a week at least.
At least. Anyway, that irritated me. I was like, oh, timeline's off. So M tries to sell Ant on the idea of filming a documentary for them. They don't have a lot of money, but we can pay you a little. Why don't you have a lot of money? Again? Anyway, what made me laugh too is in this shot, she's pacing around in the kitchen and OJ's eavesdropping. And you can see behind her on the wall, there's a big cork board, bulletin board with a whole bunch of outstanding bills, bills that need to be paid. A whole bunch of them all pegged to the board. And I kept thinking, money, why don't you have fucking money?
I didn't pick up on the bills, but yeah, more and more of the money situation is starting to bother me now.
So Ant turns her down after she says, there's something here in Agua Dulce and you're the someone who could get the impossible shot. So we need you. We need this on film. He hangs up on her. He's like, nah, I'm good. So then Angel in his work van shows up unannounced. No, thank you, sir. You were not invited.
And I will point out, he's not even wearing his work uniform, which makes me think, is the work van, is he taking it home at night? Like, is this like his regular vehicle now? Did he just confiscate this or something?
He must have. So M says it was illegal to be spying on us. And Angel says, well, let me show you something. So he shows them security cam footage of a cloud that doesn't move. All the clouds around it are moving, but this one cloud isn't moving. OJ remarks that he's been seeing this cloud for about 6 months and noticing that it doesn't move.
This is where the movie started to pick up for me, because I started to be like, oh shit, okay, this is interesting. What's going on here?
So M says it is proof of aliens. OJ and Angel disagree and say it's not enough. That's not enough proof. We need more. Angel says it's probably a spaceship in the cloud hovering. OJ says it doesn't move like a ship. Okay, how do you know, introvert horse wrangler guy? What would it would not look like?
I mean, that's a jump to conclusions for him. So it's like, that's obviously his opinion. It's like, it's not acting like a ship. I'm not seeing it. But yeah, that line does bother me because it's like, well, we don't know enough about alien stuff. And I'm an alien guy. I do believe in aliens, extraterrestrials, all this stuff. I'm part of the conspiracy. Not heavy into it. I'm not full deep, you know, drowning in conspiracy. But I believe, and it's like, yeah, we wouldn't know enough about it because you don't see it enough. So how would you know how an alien spacecraft would work?
Then we cut to title card, Gordy. So we go to the set of Gordy's home. The mom on the show delivers her line, and it includes, you guessed it, nope. That's number 7. Take a drink.
Apparently, this is the thing I was talking about. Somewhere on here, there was supposed to be some magazines or something on set that had the exact masks that Jupe's kids use to wear when they scare OJ.
What?
Yeah, so that was the tie-in that I was saying. Like, I never caught that. I mean, I don't pay attention to the background enough to notice this shit, so...
Well, I'll tell you right now, sir, I am not going back to watch this again to find out if that's true.
Oh, I will. I will. I'll watch it. I'll probably even watch it again today.
Nah, nah. You know what? Watch it. You can give me the update at a later date. Let me know if that's true. All right. So the mom on the show now, after she says her line, everyone gets scared because balloons pop. And apparently it also startles Gordy, the monkey. They're the chimpanzee. I keep calling him a monkey. He attacks people. They're screaming. And we don't really see anything. So again, my horror movie not giving me any horror. The only reason I'm harping on that is because I'm with you. It's more of the, I believe their tag of neo-Western sci-fi. And also I would add drama in there. Not a horror movie, but it's billed as a horror movie also.
Yeah, there's no horror. It's not scary whatsoever.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes stuff like the whole Gordy's home thing. And it's just because lately I've gotten on a kick. I've been watching reruns of ALF on MeTV. So like watching this, like my mind, like during the rewatch was like, how hilarious would this have been if like this would have been instead of a monkey, it would have been ALF. So you see the ALF puppet going ape shit and just killing and eating everybody.
Instead of Gordy's home, it'd be Gordon Shumway's home.
Exactly.
Are you surprised I know that?
I am not. Not many people know or respect the ALFer, so.
Yeah, I just got a from Severin Home Video. They put out a movie that Mystery Science Theater did called Pod People. And the movie, I think, is called The Extraterrestrials. And they put it out in a package and I bought it. And you get a Trumpy plush doll. And the little doll looks like a creepy ALF. It's like sitting right now staring at me. And it looks like a creepy ALF. It's pretty funny.
Didn't they make a comment in the Mystery Science Theater episode of like ALF or something? I thought they made an ALF joke during the movie.
I'm sure they do. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's on the list.
Probably because, you know, it stinks.
Flying over trout. Lyrics by Mrs. Johnson's kindergarten class.
I got to go back and watch that now.
Right? So fucking good. I was talking the other night with Mike about my favorite MSTs, and I said my top three because of Strange Wilderness, because of Jodan Baker. I said Mitchell's number one, for sure. I said, but number two is Pod People. And number three is The Black and White I Accuse My Parents. Like, those are my three. I could watch those over and over and over again.
It's like I said, Mitchell will always be the top one. For me, number two is I Really Love. And I lucked into getting it because I, when Netflix was still doing the DVDs, you could rent them. I rented it, burned it, because apparently it's never been re-released. But it was the Godzilla versus Megalodon or Megalon. I love that one. That is so freaking hilarious, the way they ripped that movie apart.
I have not seen that one, so that's now going to go on the list. Okay.
Oh, if you can find it, you got to watch it. It is so good.
Okay, fair. I will look it up. So Gordy's on this rampage, like I said, and we find out that it's the year 1998 because it flashes on the screen. So there is your timeline for the explanation for the flip phone we were just talking about. It is present day because the flashback here with him being a kid takes place in 98. So this film takes place present day.
Okay, I think we explained the flip phone when you went back and you did the, oh, okay, the detached from reality. So you explained it for me. You got it.
So we see now that the set has emptied. Jupe is hiding under the table, watching Gordy stomp around, covered in blood after he's killed somebody, at least one person. We get a hint here, you know, a little hint of horror because there's blood and killing. But we don't really see it.
It gives a creepy vibe especially because like the whole animal attack thing is creepy. It's like that because that shit can actually happen. So
yeah,
I'm
one of the
terrified about that.
No, yeah, totally. One of the actors comes in to try to calm Gordy down and gets chased and attacked. Again, we don't really see it. And then Jupe sees the shoe sitting off to the side upright and a bloody Gordy approaching. He comes over to Jupe and stands in front of the table, but he doesn't attack. Instead, he tries to fist bump him because I guess that was their thing. They would fist bump each other. So he just tries to fist bump him. And then all of a sudden, a shot out of nowhere, a sniper or cop or somebody shoots him. Gordy falls out of shot and blood splatters all over Jupe. So they took Gordy the fuck out.
They weren't messing around. Yeah, that monkey got just demolished. This is something I caught in the trivia. And this is not something I would have ever looked for. The actor who plays Gordy, Terry Notary, yeah. I guess he's played monkey characters before. Because, you know, obviously they do the digital suit and then it's a digital monkey and stuff.
I'm sorry, the actor who plays Gordy.
Yeah, because it's an actor. I guess it's called a mocap, where it's like a motion capture.
Oh, I understand what you're saying. He's not totally digital. They do have a chimp in some of the scenes.
Well, apparently, I guess in some of it, it's motion capture or whatever, because they said it's Terry Notary.
Okay.
He played Rocket in the rebooted Planet of the Apes trilogy, and he was also Kong for Kong Skull Island.
Okay.
So apparently he's got a history of playing like monkey characters, which is kind of cool.
Right.
I didn't even know they used a real monkey in certain scenes.
Oh, yeah.
All right, listeners, that is going to wrap up part one of our discussion on this movie, Nope. If you want to kill some time until next week when part two drops, where we wrap up our discussion on this movie, you can hop over to Amazon Prime and watch Nope. And I believe they also have Us and Get Out pay streaming as well. Thank you all so much for listening. And please, like I said, come back next week to finish our discussion on this motion picture. Goodbye.
Nope.
Hey, listeners, Drive-In Dave here saying we know you have a lot of options when it comes to podcasts, so we want to thank you so much for listening to ours. Please be sure to follow us on all your social media platforms. Join us in the Bad Movie Conversation. We're on Facebook with a Let's Talk Turkeys page, as well as a discussion group where you can chat with other people who also love bad movies. We're also on Instagram at Let's Talk Turkeys, all one word, plus we're on Twitter with the handle at Gobble Podcast. That's GOBBLEPODCAST. And of course, you can always email us direct at Let's Talk Turkeys, all one word, at yahoo.com.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Let's go.